Welcome to True Crime Broads. I'm Crystal.
This is Renee.
And we're so happy to have you join us today. We're doing something a little bit different. I know we've been hitting the Missy Beavers case pretty hard lately, but we're back to just sort of investigating some other things. And this is a really good one, y'all. This is a murder. Well,
mystery.
A series of, potentially a series of murders. It really is a mystery. I should have just said a mystery. Coming out of Highland Park. And I went to college with a lot of Highland Park kids. So I sort of retroactively got to know people that went to Highland Park High School, even though I didn't go there myself. And so it's just so interesting, this story, because it is local. It's in the Dallas area. And Highland Park High School is kind of its own little independent town for you guys that are not local. It's part of Dallas, but they have their own school district, Highland Park ISD. They have their own police department, their own fire department. So it's kind of interesting. It's Dallas, but not really.
Yeah.
It's like their own thing. And it's an affluent area. And this story takes place in Highland Park. It's where it began.
Yeah.
And the guy we're having on to tell us about it, his name is John Leake. That's L-E-A-K-E. And he wrote a book about
a very good book,
and it's a very his personal experience. I mean, he grew up in the area, and the lady that he's wrote this book about, he was friends with her daughter and they were buddies, so when they were like 12, 13, 14 years old. So you're not going to want to miss this episode. It's going to be really riveting. And Renee, I think I'll just read a review. Is that okay? You got anything else you want to add? Okay. All right. So we got a really nice review. It says best true crime podcast, 5 stars. And it's written by Man, M-A-N-D-Y-8. So I guess that's Mandate.
Oh, yeah.
It says, you two ladies are amazing. I love your commitment, determination, bravery, and dedication to the Missy Beavers case, as well as many others. I have learned so much from listening to your podcast. I can't get enough. Thank you for everything you've done to help bring justice to Missy. I pray whoever is responsible is held accountable soon. I believe it's only a matter of time. Keep doing what you do best. And he or she did the little hugging emoji at the end.
Oh, that's so nice.
We love that. Thank you so much, Mandate, for listening and also for the really super nice review. And
the prayers, because we sure need them for this case.
Yeah, really. The Missy Beavers case, always. But yeah, thanks again. And we really appreciate you. And without further ado, we're just going to hop right into the show. Thank you so much for listening to True Crime Broads. We would also love to see you on our social media. We have an Instagram page called True Crime Broads.
We also have a Facebook page called True Crime Broads, and then we also have a group which is called True Crime Broads Missy Beavers Case Discussion Group. And if you can, please leave us a 5-star review. We are needing some new ones.
Yes, you can leave 5 stars on Spotify if you think we deserve it, and also on Apple. You can also leave 5 stars and leave a written review if you'd like to. So thanks again for listening to True Crime Broads.
True Crime Broads with Crystal and Renee.
Ice up on my neck, let it shine, yeah. She gon' hit my line, I decline, yeah. Shine be the best on the
fine. Welcome back to True Crime Broads. We are so excited about today's guest. We have a true crime author on. His name is John Leake. And today he's going to tell us about his fantastic new book. It's called The Meaning of Malice, On the Trail of the Black Widow of Highland Park. John, thank you so much for joining us on True Crime Broads.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Great, great title, by the way. Kind of a slight Frank Sinatra, kind of 50s era title. I like it.
Right. Thank you. Hey, listen, John, if you don't mind, before we get into the book, tell us about yourself. I know you've got a really interesting background and you're local from the Dallas area.
Yeah, I grew up in this suburb. It's an independent township in the middle of Dallas County called Highland Park. I grew up in Highland Park, and I then graduated from Highland Park. Excuse me. I graduated from Highland Park High School, went to college in Boston and grad school in Boston. And then at the end of my graduate school studies, I got a scholarship to study in Vienna, Austria. Went to Vienna, fell in love with the city. And while I was there, I started tinkering around with writing a true crime story set in Vienna. I just found the old city of Vienna to be a very interesting setting for a crime story. And I stumbled across one. It was one hell of a story. It was about a Viennese serial killer. The FBI has characterized him. His name is Jack Unterweger. The FBI characterized Jack Unterweger as one of the only known serial killers in history who did his depredations against women. He murdered women transatlantically. He murdered several women in the continent of on the continent of Europe, and then he got on a plane and flew to Los Angeles in the summer of 1991, and he murdered three women in LA. So this is a very complex, multi-jurisdictional story. And while I was researching that first book, I got to know a forensic expert who was a physical evidence expert at the Los Angeles County Crime Lab. Her name is Lynn Harold. I got to be friends with Lynn, and I've consulted with her repeatedly over the years about cases I'm working on. Following my first book, I wrote about this Viennese serial killer maniac. I wrote a second book about the mysterious disappearance, and ultimately it was revealed to be a death, of a young professional hockey player in the Austrian Alps. It was a real mystery as to what had happened to this guy. I ended up investigating that case for almost 2 years to figure it out. Very eerie, kind of Twilight Zone story. Well, in the year 2007, I got a call from an old friend of mine in Highland Park saying, did you hear the news that Sandra Bridwell has been arrested in North Carolina on charges of aggravated identity theft? Hmm. Well, Sandra Bridwell was someone who I knew growing up. I actually lived on the same street as Sandra. I was friends with her daughter, Catherine, who was my age. Sandra had three children. Catherine and I were pals. This is the early 80s. So Sandra, I didn't realize it at the time. She was this beautiful, mysterious, kind of raven-haired woman who had this charisma and this kind of mesmerizing charm about her. I didn't realize it at the time in the early 80s because no adult told me. But she was a notorious woman in Highland Park who'd fallen under suspicion from committing multiple murders. And then in the year 1987, D Magazine, which is our kind of local monthly magazine about events and cultural things and gossip in the great city of Dallas. Excuse me, I'm contending with a cold. D Magazine did a cover story on Sandra called The Black Widow. And when I first saw this, it would have been my sophomore year of high school, I just couldn't believe it. I mean, immediately I realized that although the reporters of this long feature are not overtly stating it, I mean, they're clearly intimating that Sandra might have committed multiple murders.
Wow.
And that kind of has haunted me ever since. Of course, it wasn't that easy to write about this because she was a suspected serial killer. But for reasons that I explore in my book, the Dallas police and the Dallas County Medical Examiner could never quite get up to speed with her, that she was never even subjected to a difficult interview, much less ever being arrested. However, when she was arrested in North Carolina in 2007, her pattern of behavior with this elderly lady, to whom she represented herself as a Christian minister in order to move in with the elderly lady, it was this same highly manipulative, deceptive conduct that she'd fallen under suspicion for in the early 80s. Only in the early 80s, the suspicion was murder. And so once I saw that Sandra had fallen under suspicion for this, and it is a felony, aggravated identity theft, I began to intensively research this story, and it was a multi-year journey, but I've just recently published my my book about it.
Your book's amazing, by the way. We loved it.
Yes, absolutely.
And when you,
thank you.
When that must have been shocking to you in high school, first of all, to see her on the cover of D, but then later in life in 2007, I know what that's like. You grow up with people, you're friends with them. You're going to remember their parents and you're going to remember the intense experiences you had as a kid. Things just seem a little more intense when you're a little kid. Like I'm sure seeing her walking through the house and really remembering what she was like and how she was different from other moms. And that just must have been amazing in 2007 when this fell in your lap again.
Well, and I would say, and I want to emphasize this point, Sandra wasn't like other moms. She was a particularly vivid, striking mom, and she didn't really act like other moms. You know, most moms seemed kind of harried with their kids, you know, carpool and having to prepare dinner. Sandra was always dressed to the nines. She would come occasionally sauntering in and always looked like a million bucks, like she was dressed up to go to a ball or something. And she had this kind of mesmerizing way of kind of captivating you. She had these big brown eyes that she would kind of hold your gaze with. And even as a 13, 14 year old boy, I remember thinking there's something, without understanding it, but just thinking there's something really different about this woman. She has this smoldering sensuality about her. Hmm. And I think that was her primary way of presenting herself in her younger years. When she got a bit older, as happens to all of us, her looks began to fade. She shifted her game from being a sort of seductive suburban noir femme fatale to being a Christian minister and missionary. So she really changed up her game quite a bit in terms of her outward persona, but similar manipulative and deceptive way of comporting herself.
Right. So when did you first realize that maybe this lady had killed some people? When did that occur to you?
Well, that was clearly intimated. I mean, well, more than intimated. I mean, it was presented as a matter of grave suspicion in the 1987 D Magazine cover story. I mean, because she'd never been arrested, she had left Dallas under this huge cloud of suspicion in 1986. So the year before the piece was published, the authors were cautious. But I mean, the implication was clear. It looks like, I mean, in this affluent suburb with one of the lowest homicide rates in the world, Sandra was the last known contact of three people who were later found shot in the head. So, I mean, just as a matter of kind of common sense, I mean, like how often does that happen in an affluent suburb where you are the last known contact of someone who's later found shot?
Yeah.
Not one time, but three times in a 10-year period. So there was grave suspicion that was already expressed in that 1987 article. But the heart of the story, the thing that has always confounded Highland Park society, and then as Sandra then moved and became something of a socialite in San Francisco, and her past in Dallas was later discovered, everybody in San Francisco is equally confounded. Why was she never arrested? And as that question is often framed by some of Sandra's ex-friends, you know, how did she get away with this?
Right.
Because in the minds of many of Sandra's peers, I was oftentimes presented with women who just had no doubt that Sandra had committed these crimes. At least that was the belief that they expressed to me, mm-hmm. which, you know, thereby prompting them to ask the question, you know, how did she get away with this? And so this is the heart of the mystery that I explored. And I would say that the main focus of my investigation was going back and looking at two violent deaths. One was Sandra's first husband, who was found shot to death in his bed, in his marital bed at home. Sandra told the police that they had been estranged. She had been sleeping in another room, did not hear the gunshot, did not know exactly when it happened in the course of the night. All she said that she knew was that she went into the master bedroom in the morning, and there he was lying in a pool of blood in their matrimonial bed. The Dallas County Medical Examiner ruled that a suicide. And that's one that I take a very close look at. I was able to obtain the original death scene photographs taken by the Dallas police. And I had those photographs analyzed by contemporary forensic scientists. And I won't spoil the suspense. I'll leave you hanging on that.
Right.
Seven years later, Sandra, in the interim, remarried. And it's kind of an interesting social element of this story. She married a man named Bobby Bridewell. And that was the surname that she stuck with, even though she, over the years, married four different times and had multiple aliases over the years. She stuck with the name Bridewell. It's sort of an elegant name. There's also an irony in that name.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
She's not briding very
well. Not briding well.
She's not briding very well. Well, Bobby was this, he's kind of the quintessence of a good time, very socially gifted, wonderful sense of humor. Everybody loved Bobby. I would say in the year that Sandra married him, 1978, Bobby was probably the most popular man in Dallas society. He came from an old Tyler, Texas oil family, but he himself had gotten into hotel development. He's still well known in Dallas as the developer of the mansion on Turtle Creek.
Ah, nice.
And there is still a very charming, Bobby loved racehorses. And so there's this equestrian statue to this day is in front of the mansion. If you're entering the restaurant and bar, a commemorative statue to Bobby. Everybody loved Bobby. He married Sandra. He too found her very seductive and charming. Unfortunately, Bobby, his sort of glory days as a hotel developer and as newly married to Sandra were not to last. He, about 18 months after they married, he was diagnosed with lymphoma. And he was then referred to something of a society oncologist at the Baylor University Medical Center, a man named Dr. John Bagwell, who also lived here in Highland Park. His kids went to Highland Park. I actually knew his son. And Dr. Bagwell, just as an example of how close I am to the characters in the story, Dr. Bagwell was also my grandmother's cancer doctor.
Wow.
And so he treated Bobby, but unfortunately, Bobby succumbed to his lymphoma in the spring of 1982. And even at the time that Bobby was languishing in hospital, a lot of people perceived that Sandra seemed to take perhaps an undue interest in his treating physician. And about 2 months after Bobby died, Dr. John Bagwell's wife, a lady named Betsy, she was found shot to death in her car at Love Field Airport here in Dallas. And once again, Sandra Bridewell was her last known contact. That raised enormous suspicion in Highland Park society that Sandra had done it, that she was making a play for Dr. Bagwell and just simply wanted to get Betsy out of the picture. That was the widely held suspicion in Highland Park. But again, for reasons that were very mysterious and confounding, the Dallas police and the medical examiner just didn't seem to get the memo on this.
Wow.
And very, very, very quickly ruled this case yet another suicide. So that was yet another focus of my investigation, was not only obtaining all of the original police and medical examiner files in the matter of Betsy Bagwell, but also obtaining copies of the death scene photos and having those analyzed by contemporary forensic scientists. So
yeah, that's awesome.
I would say without the, you know, doing a bunch of plot spoiling, that was the focus of my investigation, which took me several years. Following Betsy's murder, I just gave it away, Betsy's purported suicide, Sandra, you know, once again was not arrested for that. About 2 years after Betsy was found shot, a young man from Oklahoma City, or I should say Edmond, which is a suburb of Oklahoma City, he just arrived in Dallas, Texas the day before and was driving down our street, Lorraine Avenue in Highland Park. He's driving down the street, and there, standing in the front yard, watering her rose bushes, is this beautiful raven-haired woman. And he just feels drawn to her. And so he parks his vehicle and gets out, and he goes and he talks to her. And she seemed very charmed to make his acquaintance. A whirlwind romance ensued. A few months afterwards, she told him she was pregnant, which is a very important element in this story. He believed her and thought he was doing the honorable thing. They married in December of 1984. And then on the eve of their 1 year wedding anniversary, 364 days later, the eve of their 1 year wedding anniversary, he was found shot to death in his car.
Yeah.
Again, Sandra was the last contact. So at this point, the cops are thinking, okay, all right, this is getting pretty suspicious. And this guy clearly wasn't suicide. He was shot twice in such a way that it couldn't have been self-inflicted.
Right.
Sandra becomes the prime suspect, but once again, she gets away with it.
Wow. Now, where did Sandra get her money? Because Highland Park, San Francisco, those have always been expensive places to live. Was this through husbands? Did she have her own money?
Life insurance, death benefits.
Oh, gosh. That's wow. That's awful. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Unreal. Unbelievable. Well, I know that our listeners are going to absolutely love hearing from you and want to get your book. And there is a website dedicated to John's book called meaningofmalice.com. We'll link everything in our show notes and on our social media. And also, John has written lots of books. So quite a few, like five books, six books, John?
This is my fourth book.
Oh, okay. And if you want to read about all his other books, and there's links to order them, his website is authorjohnleake.com, and we'll have all that linked, like I said. But yeah, a lot of our listeners are local because we started off covering the case of Missy Beaver's murder in Ellis County, which, as you probably know, is south of Dallas. So a lot of our listeners are local, and even our worldwide listeners are going to be intrigued by this story.
Oh, yeah. Just wanting to figure out where all that leads that he, you know, just shared with everybody. I know they're going to be so excited to get to know the rest of what happens. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear people's feedback on this one. Well, John, thank you so much for being on. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Well, no, I'm delighted to talk to you ladies, and I hope your audience will find this story as interesting as I have.
Right. Oh, I did have a quick question. How did you get your hands on those crime scene videos? Was that like a public records request? I mean, the photos from the crime scene from Dallas.
Public records, but it wasn't easy. They were initially submitted to me heavily redacted with whiteout, but that wouldn't suffice. I had a bloodstain pattern expert who needed to see the whole thing. So it was kind of an ordeal. One of the hardest things about researching this was dealing with these bureaucracies. The FBI had a file on her as well. That too was very, very difficult through a FOIA request. It has oftentimes seemed to me that law enforcement is kind of working for her. The difficulty of obtaining records. I think that one of the things that makes this book so unusual, you know, not only the fact that, you know, I grew up in the community in which it's happening and actually knew the prime suspects. I think it's a rare case in which I am presenting a detailed and very extensive argument with photographic evidence to substantiate my belief. And I state this is what I believe. The evidence in this story that I've been able to unearth and to analyze compels me to believe that Sandra Bridewell is an officially undetected serial killer.
Right.
And I believe she's still alive. So again, I'm not making a declarative statement. I'm not saying that she is. I'm stating that based on the evidence, and it's extensive, that I was able to obtain and to analyze, that evidence, that totality of circumstances, compels me to believe that she's an officially undetected serial killer.
Are those cases still open, do you know?
Oh, yeah.
I just wondered if police have ever reached out to you for, you know, maybe some of the work you've done in interest of continuing on those investigations.
Well, remember that the Dallas County Medical Examiner ruled the first two suicides. So, I mean, when I say they're open, I mean, legally speaking, they're closed. But when you look at the evidence, I mean, I dare say that it's quite apparent, particularly right. In the case of Betsy Bagwell, that this wasn't a suicide.
Right.
I mean, even at the time, a medical examiner field agent noted in his report that there were blood spatters in the back seat, which was completely inconsistent with the proposition that she'd shot herself. But those suicide rulings have remained unchallenged. In the case of Alan Rarig, the third husband from Oklahoma, that's still an open murder case, and she remains the prime suspect.
Wow.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Everybody's going to love this.
Renee had asked me earlier if Sandra was still alive, and I wasn't sure, so I'm glad we addressed that here. Yeah. That's a wild, wild tale. And I'm about your age, John. I remember that being on the cover of D Magazine back then. And it's really incredible to get to talk to you today about this.
Yeah. And I mean, us being so, you know, we're from, I mean, I went to Red Oak and she was in DeSoto. So we were real close to right there at the edge of Dallas and, you know, often traveled through that area. It's just amazing to hear these kind of stories so many years later.
Yeah, it really is.
One of the colorful, many colorful characters in this story is a private detective from DeSoto named William Deere.
I knew you were going to say Deere. That. I grew up with his son. Yes. Yeah.
He's a very flamboyant, yes. Charismatic, you know, very, very entertaining, interesting character. Anyway, Sandra hired Bill Deere to find who murdered her husband.
That's so interesting.
It was a little bit confusing because she wasn't cooperating with the police. She refused to talk to them, but she really wanted Bill to find out who murdered poor Alan.
I'm sure because he was on TV. He was one of those guys that was on TV and stuff. He was on talk shows. I forget which. I think it was a Tonight Show or something back in the 80s about the Dungeons and Dragons book that he had written. So I could see her being attracted to him because he is so charismatic and more public than your typical private investigator.
He got lucky
on that one. He dodged a bullet, literally.
Yeah, he has an interesting role in this story, which I relate.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. I love it.
Yeah, that is so cool. Yeah. So anyway, everybody out there, you've got to go pick up his book. We're going to link the Amazon link, and then you can also pick it up on by looking at John's website, and we're going to link everything. And John, thank you again for being on the show. It was a lot of fun. We love your book, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you again sometime.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. So do we. We'll keep in touch. Thanks, John.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Hey, y'all. As you know, my co-host Renee has a company called Southern Comfort and More, and I'm actually currently having a sheets party for her. She sells sheets and the most amazing, big, cozy, thick, soft blankets you've ever seen in your life. And if you need anything like that, please order from her. She runs a really good business. She'll have it shipped to you to wherever you are in the United States. So hop on to her Facebook page. It's called Southern Comfort and More. Or I guess they could just get with you on True Crime Broads as well.
They could just message me. Yeah. However, well, thank you for saying that.
Of course.
Yeah, I just thought,
you know, we really don't have a lot of sponsors. We've got a few commercials, which we greatly appreciate, but we don't have any like sponsors that have come to us or that we've retrieved out in the world. So I thought, why wouldn't we just promote your business? It's amazing. Yeah. So that would really help Renee out. She's a small business owner and shop small, you know, hashtag shop small.
Right.
And with Christmas coming up and Hanukkah, New Year's, there's all kinds of reasons that you should fill your home and warm your home up with these amazing blankets. So go check out her listings.
Thank you for saying that.
Oh, yeah. She's got really cool pictures on Southern Comfort and More Facebook page.
Yeah, you can find it on my profile. And also, while we're talking about that, I'll go ahead and tell everybody about Crystal. She's an amazing real estate agent. She's laughing, but I've never seen anybody work so hard for her clients in my
that's
life.
So, nice. I wasn't expecting you to say anything about me. I was just jumping on here to talk about you. Yeah, that's so nice.
Well, if anybody is in the market, please contact her because she does an amazing job. She's helped me many times on just looking at places, rentals, whatever. So yeah, check her out. Call her up if you need her
because so nice.
She's going to be there for you.
Well, that's awesome. And don't forget Southern Comfort and More. Renee will take good care of you. You can also Zelle her, Venmo her. It's super easy. And then she'll ship immediately. She ships so fast.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
You guys have a great day.
Let it shine, yeah. She gon' hit my line, I decline, yeah. Say I be the best, I'm the fine, yeah. Count on all. where you from, where you at, though? If you laughing at me, then just get up on my face, though. Tall and diamond shining like you never seen a boy glow. Ask me how I got it, I'ma tell you, got it so low. When I pull up now, I'ma put it in the space cool. We be hopping out, two doors, gotta be crew. When I take my shot, don't miss like I play. Bring the band, but you know I gotta bring the whole troop. When I'm at the top, they gon' say that they miss me. All the kids love me, like my first name is Mickey. But I guess today